Furthermore, several of the late Hittite emperors intervened in the West to impose their authority over these vassal kingdoms. One of them was an intervention in Wallusa itself, that vassal kingdom, where a king was deposed by a usurper, and the Hittite emperor, Muwatalis, the man who won the Battle of Kadesh, not only intervened and reestablished his client king there. The client king turns out to be a man whose name can be rendered very easily as Alexander. That is one of the names of Paris in the Iliad. And this king of Wallusa, I think it's Alexanku in Hittite, appears as an ally at the Battle of Kadesh in 1275. The Hittite king Mercilus II waged campaigns in the West and followed the traditional military highways that ran from Hattusas in central Anatolia across the great river Halys, through the modern city of Afyon, and followed essentially the route that you would take today on the highway going from Ankara to Izmir. And as he moved down that route, he would be joined by his various vassals and retainers who would appear en route. This would be very similar to the march of a Byzantine emperor to the eastern frontier, only he would be going from west to east. And again, recent reading of a monumental statue, a boundary stone, a relief carved in a pass, known as the Carbel Pass, where there's a Hittite-looking king, has indicated that this was a boundary marker. It marked a strategic pass at the western end of this route that gave access into the kingdom of Arzawa, which was today on the it's on what is today the western shores of Turkey. This was the great rival of the Hittites, and the king of Arzawa ruled from a city called Apassos, which is ancient Ephesus, and this king had to be humbled in a two-year campaign. Hattusas III is recorded as waging a war to bring the city of Milawando or Milawata, Miletus, under control. And in the course of the fighting, we discover that there is an adventurer by the name of Tagawagalash, apparently the Eteocles, a Greek name, who's backing rebels in western Anatolia. And he is the brother of a king of the Achaeans, a king of the Greeks, apparently the lord ruling in Mycenae, a man called Atar Issias, which is Atreus, perhaps the name of Agamemnon. And what all of these equations show is that there was constant conflict going on between these warlords, these vassals of the Hittite emperor in western and southwestern Asia Minor, who were backed by Greek adventurers, mercenaries, pirate princes, whatever, to oppose the authority of the Hittite empire. And this taxed Hittite resources. The Hittite kings had to campaign personally in these regions. They had to move in. And Troy was apparently one of a number of client kingdoms that were under this type of attack. And some type of siege or blockade or a series of attacks on that city by Greek adventurers in the late Bronze Age is what gave birth to the legend of Troy as we have it. And we have a remarkable coincidence between the literary text, the diplomatic records we have from the Hittite Empire, as opposed and the archaeological evidence as opposed to those literary traditions. And it really is one of the triumphs of early history to be able, you're actually able to coordinate these three sources with some sort of correspondence, which is really quite rare in ancient history. Now, perhaps in the legacy of the epics were far more important than the historical events. I mentioned earlier that these poems were recited orally. These traditions were transmitted over the centuries. And this oral poetry, this composition in dactylic hexameter, gave rise to the verses, the meters used in the Greek world in the Archaic Age, the period of early Greek experimentation, where they come out of their Dark Age after the Bronze Age collapse. The epic meters become the basis of many lyric meters, and most of the meters used today in Western European literature are based on these early Greek meters. What is remarkable about that is that the Greek meters are based on a quantitative pitch language, and it has been adapted to various stress languages such as Latin, French, and English. And it's really one of the most remarkable achievements in Western literature. One always senses that in music and poetry, where there's always a tension between the stress and the requirements of meter. And that's because the Western tradition has taken its poetics and music over from this really quite different Greek language structure for their meters.